wrongly accused of theft and exiled from a religious community many years before. I was completely on board at this point. The embittered weaver. That was the clincher. Silas Marner lives alone. Keep it coming.
Keep it coming.
Existing only for work and his precious hoard of money. That's my life, minus the money. But when the money is stolen and an orphan child finds her way into his house, Silas is given the chance to transform his life. His fate and that of the little girl he adopts is entwined with Godfrey Cass, son of the village squire, who, like Silas, is trapped in his past.
So that covers like 80% of the book?
In a way, yes. In a way, no.
Well, there's a lot of detail missing, I would say, in that description, texture that is found in the book. But the first clause of this, wrongfully accused of theft and exiled from a religious community many years before, that sounds like backstory. That's like the first 20 to 30 pages of a 180-page book. It is not insignificant.
No, absolutely. And the shape of the book is very different than what I was expecting.
Exactly.
I was expecting this girl to be adopted on like page 10.
And it's page 90, it's, 100, 110.
And then after she's adopted, the ending comes extremely quickly.
Yeah. It's just over at that point. It feels like.
Essentially, yeah. Because there's so much reflection and psychological exploration in those chapters, not just of Silas, but of Godfrey Cass and his brother.
Yeah.
We're even given these kind of Jane Austen-y dance scenes where we...
Oh, I love the dance scenes.
Learn more about Godfrey Cass's suitor or potential romantic interest, Nancy, and her sister.
Mm-hmm.
None of these people are an orphan.
Where is the orphan?
I barely know this orphan.
But the impact she does make on the novel is huge. So let's talk a little bit about the build-up to that. I don't know how much to sort of like talk about in the first like subject, but how do you see... Actually, weirdly, I want to start with Dunstan and Godfrey.
Let's do it.
What do you think about the pair of these two and their interaction?
So these are the rich kids.
Yes.
Of Ravelow. Godfrey's the elder. We're told that he's like basically good deep down, but he's gone astray as of late.
Yes.
And made some mistakes. Did we ever find out how he married a woman?
It's not given much detail.
From society?
Yeah.
That was questionable. Like, we kind of need there to be a wide Sargasso Sea for Godfrey Cass's...
Yes.
...wife.
Yes.
Disowned wife. But his brother... Is it Dunstan?
Yeah, Dunstan. They also call him Dunsey, too.
He's a rake. He's a cad. He's a cheat. He's a liar. He's a gambler. He's not an upstanding citizen.
This book immediately makes us loathe Dunstan in a way. Like, I was wondering if it was going to be a little bit more gray, but, like, Dunstan immediately, like, causes the death of a horse and then steals money from our wrongfully accused robber, Silas Marner. And it's just an immediate revulsion to this man.
Interesting. I had a different experience.
I know, that's why I kind of said my piece.
Okay, I see. You were teeing me up.
A little bit.
You were provoking me.
A little bit.
In contrast to a George Eliot story I read recently-ish.
Okay.
The Lifted Veil.
Oh, you're a big Lifted Veil person.
Which is about a pretty disgruntled young man at the beginning. He ages throughout the book.
Yeah.
Who can read minds. He discovers he can read minds. And he basically despises everyone in his life at some point. And there's so much just vitriol coming out of his narration. It's like a Thomas Bernhard kind of deal. going from that George Eliot to this George Eliot was a cold bath, because I got the sense that there's moral distinctions being drawn between characters, obviously. Godfrey Gass is pretty gray. Dunstan is black. Eppy, the orphan, is like shiny, angelic. And Silas we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But there is so much love and understanding in the way that all of the characters are described. There's a neutrality and an impartiality to the characterization of everyone.
Yeah.
That gave me the feeling as a reader of like and respect for everyone, even though their character was, and in the unflattering parts of their character, was being laid quite bare.
Yeah. I can't find it right now, but I found Dunstan's robbery of Silas's gold to be quite thrilling and sort of British magical. Like, he, like, his horse dies and he sort of walks down this road in a fog, and the fog sort of clears and he sees Silas's house and there's an open door and he stumbles in. And he remembers that there's this gold somewhere, and he sort of looks around and sort of realizes this crumpled piece of sand over a floorboard, like, must be covering something. He, like, reveals it, and there's this sort of, like, bags underneath, and he just grabs it and runs. It feels like an adventure story, and one that, even though I was much more repulsed by Dunstan than you,
okay,
it's completely visceral and engrossing, and even in that dastardly deed, I found some sort of, like, triumph in this terrible act that's being committed.
Interesting. Triumph how? Because you were forced to identify with him?
I was forced to feel in that moment this sort of, like, parting of the fog. He sees a house. He realizes who it is. He realizes what he can get, and he finds it. He finds it under those floorboards. And there's just this moment of giddiness and exaltation that Dunstan has, that even I, as the reader, has in return, even though he is sort of the villain of the piece.
In a way, he ends up being the hero, because he sort of makes
everything happen.
The resolution possible. We should really be thanking him.
Thank you, Dunstan.
So this is something, this comes up in the scene you're talking about, or okay, close to it, I believe. It's about Dunstan. But one thing I adore.
Oh yeah, this is exactly where I'm talking about.
About George Eliot is her power of description, her
I'm about
psychological
to read a passage.
Insight, okay? She has written sentences no one else could have ever arrived at, and yet you understand perfectly what's being said. Here's an example. A dull mind, once arriving at an inference that flattered as a desire, is rarely able to retain the impression that the notion from which the inference started was purely problematic.
Poetic. Devastating.
We all know someone like that.
Some of us are that.
We all know people that think that way. And I would never have been able to put my finger on it.
Uh-huh.
But she did. Like, that to me, that's, like, the marvel of George Eliot.